Welcome back to Talking Stocks. It is March 19th, 2021. Todd, it's been a bit of an interesting week, also a bit of a boring week. How are you holding up over there?
Pretty good, Joe. I saw one of the best tweets I think that came across my feed this week was did anybody try turning technology stocks off and on again?
Oh, I saw that one.
That March is definitely in the boy, I'd want a do-over kind of camp for a lot of the higher volatility stocks, the higher beta stocks. Certainly it's been a tale of two cities when it comes to, you know, boring industrial Dow Jones 30 type stocks versus, say, you know, the software stocks and the QQQ NASDAQ 100.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking at, we're recording this at about 2 p.m. on Friday, looking at my watch list of mostly large cap U.S. stocks, pretty heavily tech. Tech is kind of at the bottom and in the middle a little bit. But you see the ones at the top and they're retail, specialty retail, Target, Wayfair, Etsy. So, you know, maybe there's a trend there. We'll get into seasonality. we'll get into seasonality later in the episode, because we're turning the corner, rounding the corner into Q2. And there could be some plays there. So we'll get into that. But first, I wanted to just have kind of a conversation about the relationship between GDP growth and inflation. We got some news, or you might say lack of news, from Fed Chair Jerome Powell this week. Said that at the moment they're not going to be changing anything. And of course, in classic buy the rumor, sell the news fashion, the market just tanked that afternoon. Luckily, the skid didn't last all week, but still another classic example of buy the rumor, sell the news, right, Todd?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, usually on the day of Fed speak, it tends to be a little bit volatile anyways. There was also something really weird going on over the course of the last month that I think may have been kind of impacting the markets. And that is, a year ago, the Fed provided an exemption to banks from the leverage ratio requirement, an exemption on the treasuries that they own, as a way of kind of unlocking the market and making sure liquidity was there and that there was enough activity there, obviously, to keep the credit markets going. And the big debate over the last month is whether or not that exemption would be extended or not. If they were exempt from having to hold capital to offset the treasuries, then that gives them a whole heck of a lot more flexibility and firepower to be able to buy back shares and issue dividends and do all sorts of fun stuff with that money that they don't have to set aside and keep in reserve. And the thinking was that, well, okay, if the Fed doesn't do that, then does that mean that banks in mass start to reduce their exposure to treasuries, which in my, you know, cynical view, I think that's what's ended up happening. They are not, Powell announced today, Joe, he dodged the question on Wednesday, which is kind of, the fact you brought it up made me think of it. But on today, they announced that they are not extending it. It will expire, but they threw a carrot at the market and said, we will entertain feedback on whether or not we should reform the rule altogether. So basically they were like, yeah, we're not going to extend it, but you know what? We'll think about changing it in the future. And that was just supposed to be enough. And it seems like it is, because markets are green today, and bond yields, bonds finally picked up some ground. And so, you know, the yield was down a little bit earlier today after the news. So I think that was definitely a buy the rumor, sell the news. I think over the past month or so, the cynic in me is that got forecast to the big banks. Maybe there was some activity that was already occurring over the course of the last 3-4 weeks, which contributed to that, the selling of treasuries or a lack of demand causing the yields to rise up. One of the things I went back and I did, Joe, that was really fascinating was I looked at the correlation of the 7 to 10 year ETF in the core to the QQQ. And over the last year, it's been negatively correlated. I think it's like 0.52 or something like that. But since the beginning of February, it's been correlation is 0.78. So I think that there is definitely right now, the market is kind of taking its cues from what's going on in bonds. And if bonds can find a bid right now, I should say technology stocks, risk on assets. And I think that, you know, if the bond can find a little bit of footing here and those yields stabilize or maybe at least trend down at a slightly in, you know, higher rate maybe than they were before, then maybe we can get a bid in, you know, some of these higher risk parts of the market again, like technology. And if so, that would come at a time that's historically pretty seasonally strong for stocks overall. April is a pretty good month.
Yes, fingers crossed, April's a good month. We could use it, couldn't we? So I've heard, I think I touched upon this briefly last week during the show about these GDP growth estimations. So I saw another one this week that was 6%. I think I saw another one that wasn't like the 6% was from Goldman Sachs. There was another one, I forget where I saw it, that was 8%. That sounds kind of outlandish to me. But generally speaking, does that about line up with what you've been hearing, Todd?
Yeah, and that's obviously that's pretty hot for
that's historic. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know? Especially in an economy that's as developed and diversified as the United States.
Right. I mean, maybe you look at a number in China and you say, well, that's disappointing. But you look at a number like that in the US and you say, wow, okay. And then what does that mean for hiring and employment? And if employment gets going and gets tight again, what does that mean for wages? And if wages start to rise, what does that mean for inflation overall? And at that point, you know, does the Fed have to tap the brakes? And are they early or are they late when they start to raise the short-term, you know, the Fed funds rate?
Yeah, lots of uncertainty right now. Personally, I would say for what it's worth, I'm not terribly concerned about inflation at the moment. I think that the optimism of the projected growth far outweighs the threat of inflation, at least at the moment. Where do you fall, Todd?
Well, technology has been incredibly deflationary over the last 20 years. And I don't see that changing necessarily. I mean, obviously, I think we're moving at such a fast pace in development of technology that's going to continue to kind of keep a lid on inflation. I think a bigger worry would be deflation in an environment like Japan saw, kind of the, you know, was the late 80s through the 90s, you know, a 10-year period where there was just, it's been just, they, no matter what they could do, they couldn't really stimulate inflation. And, you know, I think the worry there, I mean, you could look at a lot of different ways, but I mean, if automation continues to continues forward, that could reduce employment and take a lot of the heat off of wages. Not necessarily what we want to see as an economy, though, because, you know, we want that Goldilocks moment, right? We want just the right amount of inflation to allow people to have a little bit more money in their pockets every year to be able to, you know, continue to, you know, keep the economy going and keep everything nice and smooth and everything. You don't want inflation to run too hot, and you don't want deflation either. So I'm not really concerned about inflation getting crazy at crazy levels. I mean, we're at 1.7%, I think, on the 10-year, something like that. That's still below, I think, the pre-pandemic levels. I think the trend could very well be towards, you know, higher rates over time. And if we're looking out 6 to 12 months, as we should be as investors, you know, is there the potential that the yields are a little bit more competitive with the yields of dividend yields of the S&P 500? I think that's possible. In which case that, you know, that could create some dislocations. We've talked on the show previously about how we could be seeing some rotation because of that, and, you know, some interest in some of the, you know, things like energy that maybe are more mid to late cycle, business cycle kind of plays, where technology stocks typically are very early cycle plays, they tend to do best. So yeah, I'm not overly concerned about it right now. And the other thing as an investor to remember, Joe, is that it's not until, you know, the Fed oftentimes is late and then they have to go heavier handed than they want to go, which of course shocks the market and sends stocks lower. And usually it's not until the fourth hike, third or fourth hike, that as investors, we really should get nervous. But the advice that I would have and the things that I'm doing in my portfolio is to kind of take a look again at those sector allocations, be a little bit more nimble, and be a little bit more willing maybe to own some of the baskets that you might otherwise over the last 2 years or 3 years not have really been interested in owning.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's a good opportunity to segue into Q2 seasonality. So we're recording this toward the end of March. So we're about to hit Q2, as we hinted at before, in Todd's interview with Jeffrey Hirsch from the Stock Traders Almanac last week, they talked in depth. Yes, link below or above. They talked in depth about the kind of historical trends in the market month by month, quarter by quarter, season by season. And one of the important points that I took away from that was that March, not a great month. April, very good month. So what is April like the best month for, Todd?
Yeah, one of the things that was really cool in that conversation that we had with Jeff was that, you know, I showed a chart from the Stock Traders Almanac 2020-21 edition. And let's see if I have it right next to me or not. I'll go back and take a look at that video, but I'll quickly describe it. You know, the you see in the post-election years, the presidential cycle, this kind of strength early in January and this roll down through February into March, a bump up in mid-March, which we saw tied probably to payrolls, a roll back down after triple witching, which is today, triple witching expirations, option expirations, futures, et cetera. So those expire, and then that final week can be pretty sketchy. So the week that we're going to next week can be pretty sketchy. And then April, boom, starts to accelerate and then goes on a much better vertical throughout the remainder of the year. So I think that's something that we should be thinking about as investors is, okay, are we going to see that kind of same similar tendency, or as he likes to call it, probability play out, where we will see, you know, if so, an actual buy point next week, where if we see weakness next week, we're going to want to take advantage of it, get stocks into our portfolio. So have your watch list ready, listeners. You know, put together your names that you're interested in and some price targets that you'd like to buy things at. And, you know, who knows what happens? Maybe we rip all week. I don't know. But if we do go down, maybe you take advantage of that. And then, you know, as far as Q2 seasonality, I want to show some charts and share some information on that. As you know, in episode 5, Joe, you and I talked about the different components of our model, Power 7 model, that comes up with our weekly scores. Once we have the scores on the 1600 stocks in our universe, we aggregate them by sector and industry so that you can spot, you know, basically the right baskets to be focusing your attention on. One of the 7 components is seasonality. So seasonality scores rotate or roll every calendar quarter for us. And that does create some shifts and unique shifts in leadership. I'm going to share my screen, Joe, because I want to pull up an Excel spreadsheet I've been working on here to getting ready for the shift in seasonality. And Joe, you can see that okay?
Yes, I can.
All right, great. So one of the things that, you know, if you've been following the research, you know, is that healthcare has been one of the weakest sectors this quarter. Maybe this is about to change. So listeners, keep an eye on some of these healthcare stocks and healthcare baskets, because, you know, over the last decade, the last 10 years, the healthcare baskets have the strongest seasonality. So the, you know, the XLV up 10 of the last 10 years. It's the IYH up 10 of the last 10 years, the biotech XBI up 9 of the past 10 years, and the biotech index average return 11%, even more impressive, Joe, average return of 9%, median return of 9% on biotechs. And these baskets really haven't been great performers over the last few months. And like I said, have been, you know, depressed in our ranking. So after we roll our scores, it'll be interesting to see whether or not that's enough to boost healthcare up into that neutral area. And then maybe if it starts to attract more institutional buyers, kind of gets that thing going for the first time in a little while. So I would throw a couple healthcare stocks into your watch list, things that maybe could start to go higher. The other things I would point out, I mean, Dow Jones 30 is very strong. So again, kind of that shift. You know, there's a reason that they say sell in May and go away. You know, I mean, you get that strength in April, but then it kind of like summer doldrums kind of settle in, Joe. And, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons you see things like healthcare, defensive parts of the market, you know, big cap Dow Jones, you see municipal bonds up here, you see real estate up here. Interesting, the Russell 2000 is still pretty strong. The S&P on its own is still pretty strong. But you do see things, you know, they're, you know, like consumer goods being strong, which is also a defensive basket. So I think that, you know, one of the things I would say is that, okay, yeah, position for a potentially strong April across all baskets, but looking further out to maybe May and June, be also thinking about, okay, maybe I want to have some more of those defensive type stocks in my portfolio as well.
Yeah, I've definitely got my eye on healthcare and consumer goods specifically. Consumer goods is really appealing right now because of those stimulus checks, which we've talked about a couple times now. I think some people have already gotten them. Personally, I'm not eligible for one, unfortunately, but I think those started hitting bank accounts last week. And so the logical move is to go out, and if you're assuming it's just kind of, you know, a little boost into your savings, you're going to go out and spend that. So the logical thing is consumer goods. So as I mentioned last week, Wayfair, I like a lot. I mentioned earlier Etsy, just companies like that that are selling home improvement and kind of home decor, and probably like apparel as well, I would think.
Well, Joe, that's a nice natural spot to actually look at some of the seasonality on individual stocks. If you want to do that, we can open a spreadsheet for that.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so let's go ahead and we'll pull that spreadsheet up now. And I've got right here, just again, Excel spreadsheet for the homework that I'm doing to getting ready for this role. And I just set up a really quick query where I'm able to type in different stock symbols and see how they perform over the last decade by month, just to sort of get a feel for whether or not we're in a good period or bad period for them. And one of the stocks that I, you know, wanted to pull up here was Home, which is At Home Group. And this has been, was a crazy big performer last year in the second quarter. Went from like $2 to like $8, crazy returns, and obviously been a very strong stock here in March as well, which is really interesting. But if you go back again to that seasonality chart, you'll see, Joe, here that, you know, whilst historically, you know, I think it IPO'd in 2016, so we're only looking at 4 years of data or so, or 4 or 5 years rather than data here. Nevertheless, April and May and July and August, really strong months for H symbol HOMA, At Home Group. And I think that's probably because people are just, you know, they want to take advantage and, you know, upgrade some of the things within their home. So that would be one of the things. The other thing I wanted to pull up to your point was Williams-Sonoma, talking a little bit about, you know, strong seasonality. I mean, February, March. So we're in this March period and still very strong through April, May, and June. You know, not a bad time to own it. This is a waterfall chart that shows the cumulative effect by month of seasonality on the stock. And you can see it's just a nice steady climb throughout the entire part of the year. So even though Williams-Sonoma on a chart basis, Joe, is a little extended right here, thing had a huge pop. You can see it's got a gap it needs to fill, or oftentimes needs to fill here now too. But if you go with a weekly chart, I mean, look at that. Just busting out on heavy volume to those new highs, and on the monthly chart going all the way back, all-time highs. So that's an interesting company. I probably want to wait and see that fill back in a little bit in that area, and maybe instead focus on something else like that At Home Group But still very interesting from the that perspective. I also want to touch base in a similar vein, because you were talking about consumer discretionary companies, on eBay having pretty strong seasonal tendencies in the April, May, well, not as much May, but April, June, and July. So kind of interesting to see that that's actually a relatively strong performer through that period. So eBay would be another one to consider putting on your watch list. And, you know, I can keep going, Joe, if you want. Geez, I could go all day. I got all sorts of them. We talked about landscape site, S-I-T-E is the symbol there. Site One Landscape Supply. And you can see how that chart, it's actually, this actually falls right into that. How, you know, that show we did when I talked about when I like to buy stocks. I like how, you know, you get that breakout. Now it's pulling back, kind of pulling back towards that 50, converging 50 and 21 day moving average. And if you look at the seasonality, I mean, geez, starts
to accelerate. That's some heavy seasonality right there.
Yeah, starts to accelerate here in March and then a strong right on through July. I mean, and then last week on last week's show, you, I think you brought up Lowe's, right?
I did.
Yeah. And you can see the Lowe's is just, I mean, how steady is that?
Yeah.
But still you get a nice little pop up in May and some really nice strength going all through the way through August. So, you know, that would be one to keep an eye on as well. I would also mention, hey, do you like to mountain bike at all, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So Fox Factory, they make suspension parts for mountain bikes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at the seasonality there.
Oh, April, yeah.
May, June.
Oh, yeah. It's probably like the exact opposite of Vail Resorts, if I had to guess.
Yeah, we'll look at April 4.4%, May 8.6%, June 10% average return. Out of curiosity, I'll throw Mountain up. Well, it's actually not, it's better than you would have thought.
Oh, interesting.
Obviously, November being the best months. I think a lot of people probably played into the trade on December and January, and that's why they get out of it, because they start thinking about other ideas. So that was one I wanted to mention. And then in that same vein, you know, if you like to go boating, Joe, do you like to go out on boats at all?
Oh, sure.
All right. Mastercraft.
Yep. More seasonality there for sure. Yeah. I know they're starting to talk about here in New Hampshire. They call it the ice out day on the lake, on the big lakes up in the central part of the state. That's happening in the next probably couple weeks. So
and people will be putting their boats in, figuring
very
out
soon
what works, what doesn't work, and then maybe upgrading some stuff. And if you look at it again, kind of like that site chart, I love it when they pull back towards that 21 days. You had that breakout to a new high, and then you pull back towards that 21 day. I like buying them at those support levels, Joe, because you can put your stop loss underneath there. You can define your exit pretty easily if you want to be a little bit more aggressive. And I think when it comes to seasonal plays and, you know, cyclicals, those tend to be more rentals for me. So, you know, I'm not necessarily buying a Mastercraft to hold it for the next decade, right? Like I would say a Shopify.
Right.
It's more of a rental. I'm going to try and make some money. If I make some money, great. If I don't, then I don't. Shopify actually has very strong seasonality in April. So I wanted to mention that. And on a chart, and I happen to be long this for full disclosure, I am long it. You know, I like the fact that it's here covering along that 200-day moving average, because again, I can define my exit below that point. So if you've been on the sidelines in Shopify and thought that, hey, you missed it, 1500 to now what, 1120 might be an interesting idea to maybe deploy 1% if for example your normal position is higher than that. So your normal position is like 3%, put it in like a third now and then see how it goes from there. And then probably to wrap up the conversation, some other things, McDonald's, more people being on the move maybe in the summertime. April tends to be very strong for McDonald's, which is interesting to me. And then energy stocks, Joe, very strong in our research for since really December, I think is when we started talking about them and mentioning some of them on the show. April tends to be very good, but then it gets really choppy after that. So, you know, Continental Resources, CLR is a name I own. If you're looking at picking some of these up and trying to play that, maybe you get an opportunity in the next week or so. FANG is another one with very strong April seasonality, a little bit better than Continental in that you get April, May, and June are typically three of the best months on it. And then if you wanted a healthcare, Joe, I could just keep going. I could go on forever.
we could go on all day. We'll spare you that though, viewers.
Right. For a healthcare stock, don't forget about United Healthcare. All right. Seeing some interesting action in some of these health insurance plays. And United Healthcare has solid seasonality that runs from March through June. And I think that's one maybe that you want to throw on your list.
All right. Very good. That's an excellent smattering as always. So I think the moral of this somewhat short episode today is to not be as pessimistic as some people on Twitter are being about inflation, not just yet, at least. The GDP growth is what we should focus on. If you haven't listened to that episode or watched that episode with Jeffrey Hirsch from last week, I'll drop a link in the show notes and in the YouTube description. Please do that. It's a very informative episode. And then we also published a shorter clip of that on Monday. So that's out there as well for all of you to listen to and watch. Definitely recommend watching that one on YouTube because there's a lot of charts and Todd's holding up the book in front of the camera for a lot of the episodes. So you'll get a lot more out of that one if you actually sit down and watch that somewhere. So yeah, with that, I think we will wrap up. So we'll, as I promised, we'll be publishing a short episode every Monday from here on out. So look forward to that. And then we will talk to you all again next week. Take care, everybody.